Today, we're going to cover growth marketing, early stage startups, and marketing advisory. I spoke with Matthew early about this and much more in this episode. Matthew was on the early team at Drizly. You might have heard of that company as head of growth and led growth at companies like Havenly and Stella as well. He's also advised multiple companies on their growth marketing strategy, and he joins us today to help us break down growth, especially for early stage startups. So let's dive right into it. All right. You already have this experience clearly for a long while now with growth marketing. And I'm wondering if we could take a step back for people that are in marketing, but maybe haven't gone so much into the growth side of things yet, which is honestly a lot of people fit that bucket. If you wouldn't mind redefining that, what is growth marketing to you? How do you perceive the nuances of it? Like, how would you define it to somebody?
Yeah, I think it's just a little bit more of a sophisticated or holistic approach to figuring out how to accelerate a business. I came from more from the marketing side of growth marketing. I think a lot of people come from product or could come from data science or different areas. So I think to each of us, it's like activating the skills that we have in our background, but then also learning a lot of new things. So holistically, like I can grow a company through great acquisition, or it might come from retention, or it might come from building the right product, or it might come from activating the supply side of my business. There's tons of ways to grow. I think growth marketing is just taking all of those different opportunities and getting the marketer themselves to think pretty holistically about them, to use better data, to have a more sophisticated approach to it, to be more methodical. But overall, I think it's like the fact is growth marketers, our job is to figure out how to move a business up and to the right, how to accelerate it using any and all tactics available to us. And so I think it's just taking these like really point solution things that maybe each of us have done in the past and putting them all into one space and really making it the most important feature is like growth. It doesn't matter how we get there. It doesn't matter how we do it. We just have to figure out how to pull that off.
I want to dive in a little bit into the product side of that too, because like there's some interesting stuff with product marketing and product led growth, things that I'd love to chat through, but sticking more basic up front. When you're talking through how this works for an early stage startup versus somebody that's a company that's more advanced, how do you navigate growth between those? How does it look different?
Early stage startups, I think, are in some ways the most challenging because you just don't know what growth even means for your business. So you have to start with that question, which I know a lot of growth marketers, this is a lot of discussion is happening around this, is like, what does growth mean for your business? So I think defining that is extremely important because some businesses just aren't, they're going to, acquisition matters the most, or some businesses it's B2B and it's finding those first sales clients. I think early stage growth is also about survival. And so you literally need to know what to do tomorrow to survive. And we don't have the luxury of having huge funding or an existing strategy that's working and we're trying to incrementally get better. Like early stage startups is just, literally, we have to figure out how to make it to tomorrow and the next week and the next month. And so I think it's this idea that growth marketing in an early stage is extremely practical. It's not built on a spreadsheet. To me, it's more of a story. It's developing a story around what growth looks like for you. One of the things I do with a lot of clients is we build a growth manifesto, I call it. So like literally like a one-page document of what does it mean for us to grow? Because in my opinion, growth is happening in more of a story and a believable kind of strategy to get there versus being able to model it out perfectly into a spreadsheet. And so I think that's where early stage growth is interesting, but it's also extremely challenging, is we have to be very practical. We have to figure out how we're going to put one foot in front of the other, how we're going to tell our team or our co-founders what we're focused on and what we need to do. And I think that happens more in that conversation and that story for early stage.
For this growth manifesto you just mentioned, would you mind walking me through some of the questions that you might be asking to try to arrive at the content for that one pager?
Yeah, I think the content is really, it's something that is understandable and believable, not just like internally, most importantly. Externally is great to investors and others, but mostly internally, I think it's being able to say, this is how we expect to grow, right? Like a growth manifesto isn't, we're going to put money into Facebook and we're going to run, or we're going to be the best at SEO. And like, those are fine. And those are all features and tactics in growth. But I think a growth manifesto is more like, hey, we're a marketplace. And we believe that activating our supply side and becoming meaningful and credible to our supply side is one thing that's going to accelerate our business in the short term. And so in order to do that, we're going to unapologetically focus on them. We're going to build incredible tools and software for them. We're going to try to find pockets of influence around them. We're going to, so it's actually developing a dialogue for yourself in how, what your perspective is on growth, not the tiny tactical elements of what growth, of how you're going to get there. Because then if you can keep coming back to that story, then it impacts the how you build your product, how you hire your team, how you do kind of everything, but it's more high level, right? And I actually think that's the important place to do that. So it could, it, a manifesto could mean anything to anybody, but to me, it's literally writing a one-page long form document that's not tons of little bullet points and tactical things, but it's actually like a dialogue of what growth means for your business.
So for earlier stage startups, we don't have to talk through the lens of the manifesto necessarily, but I am just curious how you would frame like what growth marketing kind of should, like what, how you would walk through the initial steps if you were advising somebody or running it for yourself at an early stage startup. How would you come in and think through, here's all the stuff I've got to figure out to make the growth engine kind of at least start getting going? Because you mentioned you don't have any answers really when you just start out, but how do you start getting those answers?
Yeah, I think it's what I mentioned earlier about what does growth mean to the business? So is growth literally just like we're a D2C business and we need to acquire more people and get them to know who we are? Are we in a market that already has momentum where there's a proven need for something? Like if we're selling supplements, like, you know, maybe you don't necessarily need to convince people that supplements are good. You just need to have the best type of supplement. I don't know. Or in a new category, like when we launched Havenly in the online interior design space, like people weren't looking for online interior design. We weren't trying to just convince someone that we were the best in that category. We were trying to convince them that they should even think about using an interior designer. So I think to start with, you have to figure out, what does growth mean? What am I trying to actually accomplish? And then go build very practical ways of testing and understanding that. Like early stage growth is also extremely practical in nature. Like it's not, like strategy is good, but what are we doing tomorrow is the question that I'm always asking myself and I'm always asking clients. Like, and so if we have number one, like what does it mean for us to grow? What does growth look like for us over, let's say, the next 6 months, right? Not 2 years, not 5 years, but 3 months, 6 months. And then what are the ways that we believe we can get there? So then what are the actual tactics and things, the tools surrounding that? Is it reaching out to that first group of 100 supply side individuals to try to understand if like we're building the right tools for them or getting them in and acquiring them? But it's doing that. And then it's literally just like, let's take those steps. Let's test it. Let's try it. Let's plan on being wrong maybe more than half the time in finding a new approach or being willing to like move within that approach. But yeah, I think it's knowing how we grow, knowing what we're going to do to get there, and then actually the plan of like the day-to-day of being able to accomplish that.
So as an example, let's say you are an early stage startup and you're coming in to run growth and it's an existing market. So there's competition,
yeah,
there's demand that's proven and all this good stuff. How do you think through like this balance between having to be differentiated or like almost finding a moat with your growth strategy versus just doing what's already been proven out to work in the market?
Yeah, I think there's times to just capture share that's out there. Like if I was coming into a market that already had, it was like hyper competitive, but had a well-established like need state, then I would focus on trying to capture that. And maybe that is the very tactical growth levers of like trying to be better, trying to be extremely differentiated, trying to compare myself to the competitors that are out there and show why we are unique and different and whatever that might be, better price, better product. I think that maybe the more challenging thing is when you're coming into a market that is not as existing, because what you have to do in that case is you actually have to nurture people pretty heavily. So like when people know the features, when they know the benefits, when they know that something's necessary, then to me, it's about just being the best at communicating that and actually obviously being able to provide that to customers. What's hard is when you're in a market when that doesn't exist. And so you actually have to bring people, I think about it as this analogy of like, you have to find bridges to bring people into the thing that you're selling, right? And so in the interior design space, building bridges was proving to people that, hey, the things that you think about traditional design are actually not true, right? Like design can be fun. Design can be inexpensive. Design, you know, can be for everybody. So you find these bridges to slowly start moving people closer and closer into what you're selling. And then you just nurture them over time. And eventually those people, I think, self-select into going, okay, yeah, now it's time. And now I think I'm going to buy that. Now I think I'm going to try that. And that to me builds a really strong moat, because if you're putting that, the most valuable thing any startup has is the relationship with their customers, right? Like period. So if you own that, if you matter to those individuals, then that's the strongest moat you can build. And so I think just being really focused on nurturing and being someone that your customers can trust or that they want to listen to, you can do whatever you want with that. And to me, that's the best way to build a moat.
I want to get more specific here with, so at Drizly, if you want to talk through that a little bit, I'm just curious, the initially coming in, what the core channels were that you were like really focused on,
yeah,
and how you landed on those, and then maybe how it shifted too, because I know that channels just come and go, and even if something's working one day, it can go away. But initially, what were those channels that you were focused on, and how did you land on using those?
Yeah, I think it's growth is about thinking about the short term, like we need to survive to see tomorrow type things where we have to get some customers in. And then it's also the long term. Once we are surviving, then how are we going to actually be like thriving and growing and getting to that next level? At Drizly in the early days, the like survival element was we had this is early days of like food delivery when Instacart and everybody else was launching. Uber Eats didn't exist. A lot of these things didn't exist. Alcohol delivery was extremely controversial, but also sexy. And like most people thought when they ordered beer to their door, like they didn't actually expect it to show up. They thought that it was probably illegal. In many states it was, but we really focused on that. We knew that we had an outsized chance of getting attention because of the controversial nature of what we were doing. And PR was an absolute huge winner for Drizly, because when we entered a market, we would focus specifically on that market. When we launched Denver, we went to the press and we said, hey, we're launching an alcohol delivery service in Denver. Here's why it's safe. Here's why it helps alleviate even drunk driving and other things. Like there was huge benefits to it, but it was controversial enough that every press outlet wanted to cover that. And we knew that, and we built that playbook. And so we built a playbook for every single market. We focused on a market to market level rather than doing this like broad strategy across the US. And that was we knew when we would go into a market, we'd run a heavy press strategy. We would then find the best retailers, the best liquor stores in that town that we felt if we could be meaningful to them, if we could get them a lot of customers, that they would care more, that they would then talk about Drizly. But our goal was every single market was its own specific strategy, but we would run a similar playbook there. The long-term thing for us was a huge SEO win with Drizly. We became better at building product pages with reviews and product details. We became better than the actual liquor brands themselves at doing those. Also, those liquor brands didn't really have a good online presence. And so even to this day, if you're searching for specific alcohol brands or product types, Drizly will probably outrank all of those brands themselves, because our long-term strategy was, let's have the most rich content, the best reviews, the best optimized product pages. And so it was using short-term and long-term growth programs and strategies to help accelerate us. Some people focus too much on the like big long-term stuff, and then they don't ever survive long enough to get there. And on the other end of the coin, sometimes people they do what's in front of them today, but they're not thinking about where they're going and how they're going to get to that next level. And so at Drizly, it was definitely using those two together.
But it's interesting. I remember seeing the ads, and like, I remember there was some, there felt like there was a split. People were like, oh, this is super cool, or this is a little risky. So we've talked a little bit about how you run growth, but you're also an advisor, and it's a very different approach. When you're coming in as an advisor, not even after you've like really signed on, but when you're just analyzing a new company and kind of feeling if it's a fit or not, what are the red flags of their marketing motion that you might look at and decide to stay away?
Companies have to decide that they want to give the keys to someone to go run with it, right? If you spot a company that they believe that marketing or growth matters to them, but they're not willing to to let go of what they've already been doing or their own biases around that, then I think that's a big red flag. Growth marketers need to be unapologetically deputized to do, to chase all parts of the opportunity within the organization, right? So if they're not being given that, the ability to do that within a company, then they're going to struggle. And so what I look for is that leadership or that founder to basically to be providing that level of trust, which is earned, but you need to earn it quickly. And that also the founder or the CEO or the leader, they're ready to get in there and roll up their sleeves as well. Like you can't just pass the buck off to somebody. Like if you're planning to hire a growth marketing consultant or advisor or fractional person, and you think that they're just going to go, you could just hand everything off to them. Like you need to work alongside those people. You need to help them get to where they need to get to within the organization. You need to help them chase all the right things. You need to help add value and educate them on the industry. Like our job is not to understand everything within the industry or the category. It's to come in and be, to use analogies and use past experiences to provide, to de-risk growth and to find opportunities to accelerate growth. And I'm always looking for that there's the individual who's going to come alongside us or the team, as well as there's a desire to allow that growth person to chase and identify all and exhaust all those opportunities that are available to us. And if that's not the case, then I think it's going to be hard to be successful within that relationship.
For somebody that's like talented in growth and they want to make that leap to doing advising or consulting on the side or even full time, what would you tell them the work looks like on average, whether it's day to day or week to week? What does the work actually look like when you're working with these clients?
I think it's finding a mix of being very strategic and also very practical and execution focused at the same time. Like clients, some clients are hiring you to just provide very strategic level information and kind of let a team go run that playbook. But I would say that's probably not at an early stage. Certainly that's not the case most often, right? And so early stage companies need strategy to figure out how they can move forward in a methodical way. But they also, as I mentioned, need to know what they're supposed to do tomorrow. And so for me, I found that transition from someone, you need to have the experience to be able to see the forest for the trees and provide the strategy and say, I've done this at other companies. And so therefore I can see the path and the opportunity that you have in front of you. But I also am willing to come in and just try things and qualify them quickly and get them done for you. So I think it's the ability to do that. I think also just being able to manage up and communicate properly. You're typically working with founders, and founders, if you haven't worked with founders, then that's a skill set in its own, right? You need to be able to manage up into someone and provide them with the confidence that you're going to help them get there. You're going to help. The relationship between a growth consultant and a founder is very close, and there's a lot on the line, right? That founder's trusting you with a company that they own, that they founded, that if you're not doing the right job and if you're falling short, like that's a big deal. It could mean life or death at some times for that company. So being able to have that burden of growth and constantly understand what that looks like and how to manage that, I think is important as well. But certainly that ability to really to be strategic and dig in alongside them and be practical and help them understand what they need to be doing tomorrow, the next week, the next month to be successful is an important feature.
What does your tech stack usually look like with clients? Do you have the project management system? Do you have like SEO tools or paid tools, or like what's all the software that you use usually?
Yeah, I think there's just a set, like when trying to triage and understand an opportunity, you have to look at the landscape and look back as far as you can within to what the company's done so far. But yeah, I think there's the organic SEO type stack tools. Like I use SEMrush weekly, probably when trying to understand what the opportunities are for a client, using, I think, lots of just research in general, understanding competitors and others who are out there, getting access to as many of the tools or all the tools that the client has. I think sometimes the clients don't realize like how embedded a growth marketer advisor needs to be. And so access to any of their BI analytics stack, their email, their social channels, like not necessarily because we're going in and doing that management, but because we have to, in order to guide them on the right path, we need to view the entire map, right? Like we need to know what has happened, what is happening, who are their customers, what are they doing on the site, what are their competitors doing? Like, I think it's coming in and really quickly, it's like, how do you become an expert in their business in one-tenth of the time that it would typically take? And so it's like being able to quickly go in and triage that. And so just exhausting all the marketing stack tools that are available to us within the business itself.
How would you fill in the blanks for this sentence? I think that a lot of top marketers are freelancing more because...
Yeah, I think top marketers are freelancing more because clients like to hire freelancers when they have a big opportunity or problem to solve. And that's what top marketers do best, right? Like we use past experiences to move fast, to make quick decisions, and to figure out a plan to drive growth. And it's most interesting when we get to come into a startup or a company or an organization that has those challenges or has those opportunities in front of them, and we get to go focus on them for a short period of time. And so I think that's why you're seeing a lot of people deciding to move from being internal to being able to go take on those challenges, maybe in that shorter time frame, and then get to move on to that next one.
Awesome. Matt, appreciate it as always. Is there anything top of mind that we didn't cover here that you wanted to get out into the ethers?
I don't think so. Yeah, I think it's important from a marketing standpoint to understand where you like to play. Is it early stage? Is it that growth? Is it the later stage stuff? Being able to understand that as a freelancer matters a lot because there are very different types of projects. And so I think being able to figure out where you like to play and where you're best, understanding as a growth marketer, like there's so many things that growth marketers can work on. What are the features that you bring to the table that are best in class? What is your superpower as a growth marketer? And being able to overlay that with the stage of the companies that you're best at and where those features, where those skill sets are most important is extremely, extremely important. And that's why I play at the early stage, because that's where I've spent my time. I like to dig in. I like practical, like messy growth problems. And when they start to get a little bit, when it becomes more about identifying, like become incrementally better at certain things like conversion rates or retention or stuff like that, that's just personally not where I'm best. I'm best at that stage where we don't really know what the plan looks like and we need to start building it and executing on it all at the same time. And so I think it's just extremely important for people to identify that for themselves and to know where they're going to be successful.